This is Hope Solo. Welcome back to Hope Solo Speaks. Happy New Year, everybody. I'm very thankful and proud to be here with SiriusXM. I'm very proud of the work we have done here and the content that we've provided with insightful, honest, and recognizable guests. I'm proud to touch on topics outside the realm of stadiums and arenas. I'm proud to have pushed boundaries time and time again, often having very difficult discussions and gaining invaluable insight. I'm proud that at the very start of 2023, my formal objection to the U.S. Women's National Team's class case was awarded an additional $1.1 million just last week. I objected for two reasons. First, believing that each player deserved to know how much money they would receive from the settlement proceeds. I objected to class counsel's failure to list how much money each player would be allocated from the settlement. And second, I objected to the amount of attorney fees Jeff Kessler was attempting to collect. Kessler's attorney fee request totaled $6.6 million, which represented 30% of the entire $22 million settlement amount. In the Ninth Circuit Court, the high limit for attorney fees is 25% of the settlement amount. The court reduced Kessler's fees to $5.5 million, and an additional $1.1 million will be distributed amongst the players. We were able to get this done all by doing what I do, dissenting, not caving, not taking the easy way, not following suit, and certainly never giving up. It's been a great start to 2023. We have also worked hard to pass the Equal Pay for Team USA Act, which compensates Olympic athletes equally and was passed in both House and Senate and signed by President Biden on January 5th. Where can we go from here? 2023 is showing itself to have much potential. 2022 was also a year filled with major victories and historic wins for our entire U.S. soccer family. A AAA court unanimously found U.S. soccer and the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee in violation of the Ted Stevens Act for not practicing 20% athlete representation in all decision-making. So, Athletes Council, it's time to wake up. This happened on your watch, and fighting for athletes' rights is your main reason for existence. The unanimous finding by the AAA court was a huge victory for all of us who care about the state of our sport. Yes, 2022 had major victories, and yes, major losses as well. But as always, we, the Stevens, come out on the other side, heads held high, and I stand here very hopeful and excited today on our first episode back in the new year. I also want to take a moment to thank all of my listeners, many who love me, many who hate me, many who may love or hate our topic that week, but who are always willing to see things from angles outside the muzzled mainstream masses. Thank you to everybody here today. Now, this is a topic that I'm not exceptionally excited to talk about, but I would be remiss if I didn't address the controversy taking place on the men's national team. I'm sure by now we have all had this subject thrown down our throats as we try to prevent our gag reflex over the ongoing U.S. soccer drama. But for a quick recap, here's what happened over the course of the past month. It all started with U.S. soccer announcing that they hired a law firm to investigate potential inappropriate behavior toward multiple members of the staff and outside the organization. This statement was followed by men's national team coach Greg Berhalter putting out a lengthy statement saying in part that when he was 18, he kicked his future wife in the legs, an incident he decided to disclose publicly after an unidentified individual threatened to use that information to, quote, take him down as the men's national team coach. He went on to say that there are no excuses for his actions and that it was a shameful moment that he regrets to this day. He continued saying that he and his future wife, Rosalind, who he went to the University of North Carolina with and who also played on the girls' soccer program, reconnected after 7 months and after he voluntarily sought counseling. Now, all this took place with his then-girlfriend, now wife, 31 years ago when they were in college and when he was 18 years old. Come to find out, the complaint was made by the mother of World Cup player and national team members Gio Reyna's mother, Danielle. She contacted U.S. soccer sporting director Ernie Stewart to make a complaint about Berhalter after Coach Berhalter attended a leadership conference and spoke about a situation at the World Cup that involved disciplining a player and even thinking about sending him home. it was made clear that he was referring to Gio. Danielle Reyna was upset about Berhalter dumping on her son and drops the bomb, saying that her son is being punished for acting like a teenager and Berhalter didn't get punished for his own behavior as a teenager. In the times that we live in, these insinuations and soft allegations must be investigated. The investigation is ongoing. But the storyline is much deeper. It plays out like the days of our lives. Claudio Reyna, former national team great and father of Gio and husband of Danielle, was the best man at Berhalter's wedding. They are former teammates and family friends. Their wives were roommates in college. Let's be clear. Rosalind, Berhalter's wife, is the only real victim here who has been forced to play this day out over and over again publicly. All this is taking place while her husband is being considered to extend his coaching duties with the men's national team. Now, is this just a mother defending her son? Is this blackmail? Can anyone come out unscathed? To help me discuss this sad and quite sickening topic is somebody that isn't afraid to be honest, which is almost impossible in this era where everybody is tiptoeing around complete truth for whatever self-serving reasons, be it for political reasons or for lack of integrity or because of fear or financial concerns. Pondering about all that has been fought for over the years in our soccer community, I couldn't be more excited today than to reconnect with a man that I stood side by side with at the election for U.S. soccer in 2017. A man I can always rely on when it comes to wanting better from U.S. soccer. A man I have seen be both hopeful and hopeless. And a man who continues to give back to the game time and time again. Eric Winalda has over 100 caps for our country. He has been the manager of numerous clubs. And he is the host of Counterattack on SiriusXM FC. All right, Eric, welcome to Hope Solo Speaks. Thank you so much for being on the show. The last time I saw you, I think it's been about 5 years now. It was in Los Angeles. You took us out to dinner. You were with your wife. I was with my manager and a couple girlfriends of mine. And we had a fabulous Italian dinner at your spot. And yeah. I think it's been 5 or 6 years.
That's too long. I'm sorry. That has been too long.
Well, the pandemic hit, obviously. Right. I stopped going out west, stopped going to Los Angeles, Seattle, and really just tucked it in here on my compound, Point Defiance. We got 60 acres. I had twins. And we've really just been trying to get through these last couple of years. It's been a tough couple of years for us. So I haven't seen very many people, and it is so good to see your face over Zoom right now.
No, it's good to see you, buddy. I think the soccer world is so strange, and then life gets in the way sometimes, but it's good to be with you. It's great to see you.
And Jeremy wanted me to tell you what's up.
Thank you for that.
We had some good times at the election.
Yeah, if we want to put it into that category, that's fine. But, you know, I guess it's like one of those things that happened.
You know? That did happen, and we can talk about that too. Okay.
Where do you want to start? I'm ready for anything, but where do you want to start?
Well, there's so much to catch up on. You know, like we said, we haven't really talked about anything for six damn years, and so much has gone on. And you and I have been in the hot seat a number of times on a number of different topics. I'm proud to have you on the show because of how honest you are, how open you are. We see eye to eye in most ways. But right now, you know what the hot topic is. And for me, the hot topic, being Gio Reyna, being everything that's going down with the Berhalter family and the Reynas, it has been clear to me that soccer is not just soccer news anymore. It is American sports news. It is out there with the top of sports news for the last month. So I believe that we can officially say that soccer in the United States has finally become mainstream. And with that means that we can no longer sit in this incestual, abusive work environment without being found out anymore. Right. So I say good fucking riddance to that environment, to those incestual relationships that have been a part of U.S. soccer for so long. But I do almost feel guilty even speaking about this topic, Eric. It feels like Spanish football and the constant drama of Barca feels like we're on a soap opera show. Nonetheless, what's going on with the Reyna family and the Berhalters, it's sad. It's, in my eyes, it's pathetic. And it hurts many people involved. It's a stain on the sport that we love. It's an embarrassment to the soccer community. And when in the end, whatever the end result is, nobody's going to come out of this a winner. Mm-hmm. Nobody can fully be happy, whether it's guilt by one party, they have to live with that guilt, or the embarrassment and the end to a career for another party. So I know many of us are sick of talking about this topic. I've taken a couple weeks of a break for the holidays and the new year. So here we are. We come back to this topic. Are you sick about talking? Are you sick talking about this yet?
I don't think that's the right word. I'm not sick of it, but I think it's actually in the way it always has worked, as you well know, is there's U.S. soccer doesn't have one elephant in the room. They have about 10, and nobody likes to talk about the things that really happen, and nobody takes action on when something bad happens or something corrupt is in the midst of this business that they run. Nobody wants to talk about it. They just put it underneath the carpet and they expect it to go away. But this whole NWSL thing was an indicator that yeah, there's a dark, dirty world out there that was perpetuated by people who are incompetent or afraid to speak up. And there's been some very powerful women who have challenged the system, but at least have been brave enough to say what was necessary to invoke change, which is what you and I have always been about. We've always wanted things to be better. We get put in a bad light because we happen to be the people that say, well, this isn't all fine and dandy. This isn't perfect. It needs to be better. And there's a part of them that wants to say, well, this is the way we've always done things. And then there's a part of, don't say that, because there's a guy that's about to spend a lot of money on this thing that we don't want him to know that. So you get put in a weird spot for being truthful. But this whole thing with the Reynas and the Berhalters, as unfortunate as it is, it does shed light on a very underworld that a lot of the American fans don't know exists. And, you know, when you talk about the Reynas and their inclusion in this, it's mainly because they have a sense of entitlement and they have a sense of access. They felt that they had access to the powers that be, that they could just make a call and make this go away. And that's not the way this process works. Now, what has happened with, unfortunately, with Danielle and her inclusion in this and her feeling that she needed to say something or to be vindictive, if you're going to mess up my kid's life, I'm going to come after you. It's just, we've learned one thing. Oh, don't mess with a soccer mom.
You know what? I wasn't going to be the one to say it, Eric, but it does have rumblings of what I've been through on many of my journeys with my teammates.
Right.
You know, and these were former teammates. It just feels like the drama, you know, backstabbing.
Here's what I would say to you, and you remember when this whole thing went down with your coach, and
what time?
when we lost in the final 3-0, and we made the decision of the bad decision of taking you out of the goal, and then we put microphones in front of you and said, "How do you feel about it?" And you were villainized by your teammates. You were ostracized by the system because you're a bad person because you're a competitor. Now, I remember defending you then. I remember the Brandi Chastains of the world saying, "I can't believe you're defending her." I remember that. And in a certain light, I have this understanding of human emotion. And I forgiveness is a big part of me. I think that what you did actually is in a lot of ways similar to this in the sense that people just don't understand the realities of you worked your whole life to get to a point where you could be your best and do what you wanted to do, and that's to help our country win a game. And then it's taken away from you in a moment because someone has a gut decision. these kind of decisions, they're big decisions, and then they can all hide behind the, well, these are poor decisions. This is why I was hired to do this, because when it's, and that obviously that decision didn't live well, but understanding the realities and the disappointment that a human being feels when they've worked their whole life for something just to have it taken away by an inept, incompetent person is going to invoke a human emotion that is not going to be understood by people who aren't as competitive as you are. And so to be villainized for that, I thought that that was wrong. I didn't like it at the time. I still don't like it today, because I remember saying, well, what the fuck did you want her to say? I would have been just as bad as Brianna that day. Is that what you wanted her to say? Would that make you feel better that you had been a good teammate to say that I'm just as bad as she just was? No, don't do that. Don't do that to somebody who's worked their whole life for a moment that was taken away from them. So in essence, that's how I think the Reinas feel. They feel that they've gone all across the world and their son is very good and deserves an opportunity to play in a World Cup. But for all these other stupid extenuating circumstances, the reasoning made sense to a coach who had some sort of vendetta against a family not to play the kid. That sounds like U14, man. That doesn't sound like the U.S. national team.
So you do believe there was a vendetta going into the World Cup against Gio with Greg Berhalter?
I do. I do think that all things considered, and what I've done is I've stopped making statements. People can't handle statements. They just can't. I had to deal with the likes of those two guys. I'm just going to call them the two guys over at ESPN who are still struggling with the English language. They don't know the difference between when somebody points it out that someone's lying and actually calling somebody a liar. I've been called a liar in this process by people who were misinformed, did not know what I knew, and were just trying to get clickbait for their platforms, which was a really bad decision. That's called defamation of character and slander.
Well, calling somebody a liar, I mean, those are fighting words. Come on. Let's have a little class here.
I have been told by people who don't understand how this worked, when I said that Berhalter lied about the status of the player, that is factual. Yeah. That is an actual fact. He said that the kid had some tightness and that's why we didn't play him. That's what he said. That is actually false. And we knew that the second that Gio said, I was good to go. And he refuted that, and then it came out much later. I was villainized and told that I was the bad guy in this story simply because I stated something that was truthful and factual, which people can't understand or comprehend. So the reason why I'll go back to what I was going to say is the reason why I don't make statements anymore is because I'm just tired of the riffraff not understanding that when I speak, I don't get into the name calling business. I don't do that. It's not necessary. But if I know something, not that I felt that it needed to be shared, I actually would regret that. I think that there's a piece of that makes me feel as that my words became a distraction to the team, and I didn't want that. I didn't want me to be a distraction to the team's success or lack thereof. So what I say is, okay, has anybody looked into the history of these two people? Yeah, okay, they're friends. They've been lifelong friends. Taylor Twellman is still telling everybody that they're best friends. He was still saying that a month ago. That hasn't been true for about 8 to 9 months. These two have been at odds. And the reasoning behind that has been some of the decisions that Claudio has made when it comes to the management of one Sebastian Berhalter, who played for Austin and was moved to Vancouver. So people need to ask themselves, did that in fact have some sort of effect on these two's relationship? And then you do the work, you do the
timeline,
investigative reporting, meaning the media, which we both know isn't going to happen, but I'll ask the question, did that have something to do with these two? And the answer is pretty clean.
When you look at the timeline as well.
Right. And so what Gio has gone through, very similar to your situation, I would say, to work as hard as you worked to get to the point where you were at the top of your game, playing in a final, playing for everything, you don't get that chance. I view it the same way, that Gio was stripped the opportunity to help our country for all the wrong reasons. And that's a real problem. And when you look at the choices that Berhalter made for this team, we could be critical of that, but he's the coach. He's going to make his decisions. But in this particular case, to let the other circumstances creep in to be the determining factor of why he wasn't able to do his job appropriately, which is to put the best players on the field to win the damn game, is not what happened. And that's when we're allowed to be angry as ex-players.
Yeah.
We're allowed to question that, to challenge that, to ask the question, why? And when we got to the bottom of that why, it doesn't make sense. So it doesn't make sense for it to go this direction.
We always hope that we can find leaders, managers, who can make decisions without emotion, right? But like you alluded to earlier, we all have this human emotion, especially as players being competitive. The riffraff sometimes don't always understand that aspect of it. But you hope to find that in a leader, in a coach, in a manager, somebody who will make decisions for the best of the team, for the best of the country, and put the performers on the field without any baggage from the past, without holding animosity for kids being kids, or animosity just because they don't like a particular personality or whatever it may be. And how, when you look at the history of the managers, both on the men's team and the women's team, we have never had that true leader who doesn't give a shit about anything else around them but the players on the field, who will make the right decisions and actually lead these young men into a World Cup, into play. And same on the women's side. They have been nervous coaches, many of them. They have succumbed to the pressure of the media and the press. We've seen in the instance that you're making comparisons to, back in my case in 2007, and Greg Ryan benched me, I don't think they're entirely similar, because—
I don't want to go there, but I was taken out of nowhere, right?
But no, that but coach fell victim to, let me finish what he fell victim to. He felt victim to the pressure of the players, of those big time players, the leaders like the Christine Lillies, the Abby Wambachs, who wanted to give Brianna Scurry her last, Cinderella game, her send-off game against Brazil, this big game. And that was him falling to the pressure of the captains. So you have all these different managers who aren't able to really lead these big name players and bring a team together. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Can you think of a manager who's been able to do that for the United States?
No, the only one who actually, ironically enough, is it might very well be, Bora, Bob at times, Bruce certainly had his cronies. But I think I would go back to this. I mean, what you just said is, can we find somebody to lead? And the one thing, and Klinsmann to me, it became all about Landon, and then he couldn't get on with Landon, and Landon was trying to be some of the Eurex teammates. He was trying to have that kind of influence because of who he thought he was. And Jurgen said, I don't want this on my team, and you're out of here. And he was, of course, the villain in that story, when he may have very well been right. I wish he could have handled it differently. Landon is still a great player, who it might have been a better scenario to figure out a way to get him on board to be a better team guy, which he is not. He's all about himself. We had the 98 thing where we had John Harkes and my wife. Fantastic stuff. That blew the whole team up. But I was still, if you believe it or not, I was still in the frame of mind that he's still one of the best players in the country. He should be on the team. And my coach couldn't do it. So we've had our fair share of drama. We've always figured out how to have drama. To follow up on your point, though, is that we need somebody that's going to lead the team. We need somebody that's going to have an unbiased opinion about who needs to play and who our best players are. Berhalter has made this all about a system. It's a process. Ernie Stewart, who has now gone to the dark side as well, is a part of that process. McBride is in the room, but I don't think he does anything.
Well, you work for US soccer long enough, and I
don't know what color Kool-Aid it was.
You got to the dark side at some point.
Everybody's got like a different color rim of the Kool-Aid they're drinking. And they're pretty easy to find out who they are. But the problem will be now, if it, like, for example, if they make this decision for Berhalter to continue, which I don't think is what is going to happen. It is impossible for our players to trust a coach who has just gone the route of throwing somebody under the bus the way he did, one of our better players. It is something that in the past, as the one thing that we did a pretty good job of trying to keep things in-house, the real reasons why, or the fights or the arguments or the relationships that weren't working. I know you've had your fair share of drama on the women's side, and I'm privy to that. I know some of that stuff, but that's not stuff I'm going to run to the media with. I'm not going to tell people what I think of Julie Foudy. I'm not. I'm just not going to do it. But in our scenario and a couple of scenarios with those teams, we did a pretty good job of figuring out a way to go on the field as a unit and a collective group that, whether we disagreed in the locker room, doesn't mean that we're going to disagree on the field. We're going to figure that part out. Steve Sampson blew it. I just don't think Bruce Arena was equipped to handle Jurgen Klinsmann's group. It was too much of a transition. Bob had some good success, you could say, at times. And he's a guy that's not afraid of the hard conversation. He is a guy that will talk to you about stuff, but that doesn't exonerate him from blame of making some bad choices. So it's never perfect. It's never perfect. But as we move forward, we would hope that we could build a culture that there's a trust amongst the players that if there is a process, the bottom line is the job is to pick the best players to win the goddamn game. That's it. It has nothing to do with who your dad is. It has nothing to do with who your agent is. It has nothing to do with your story. Your story is gone. What we need is you on the field, participating in a game and being the best option. And that's where we seemingly get it wrong a lot. Hope we have a lot of coaches that let all of these other factors weigh into their decision-making process, and they just can't compartmentalize or differentiate the two. And we get it wrong more than we get it right.
Well, that reminds me of something that I want to bring up. I can't tell if you are hopeful anymore within the system of US soccer or hopeless. I sent you a text some time ago.
Yeah.
And I was hoping you don't mind if I share that. Can I share that? So you posted something about nothing is going to change within the realms of US soccer. It had been 4 years since we lost the election. You went on to say that wanting change will only cause pain if you care. I texted you back and I wrote, ouch, that's real, but I won't stop caring.
I remember you wrote that. And I'm
there's so more though. There's more. Yes, know, exactly. That's what you said. You called me, hey, youngin', basically. So you texted back, that's cute. You're young. You didn't say that's cute, but that's kind of how I interpreted it. You were like, you're young. Just wait. You're young. And I texted you back. I said, sounds like you lost your fangs. Mine are still sharp.
I remember that. Yeah.
Oh, but
Amanda, that's 4 years ago. I posted something today, I believe, or yesterday. A lot of people asking me, hey, I'll see you at the convention. And I have no reason to go to a coaching.
I hear you.
And it's not because I just don't want to walk through those halls and listen to Hope anymore. Not you, but everyone's.
Yeah, of course.
Everyone's belief that this is getting better. Everyone's belief that we're on the right track. Everyone's optimism. And you just end up being Debbie Downer, your Schleprock. You say,
or let down time and time and time again. I will tell you, I believe my fangs remain sharp. But my hope for real change has dwindled. With the equal pay lawsuit settlement, which is shit. Again, the media doesn't want to talk about how horrible the deal is. The media refuses to address that major aspect of the deal and where we went wrong, where the team went wrong. And then the Federation's failings along the way. I've been fighting these battles behind the scenes now since I've been done off the field since 2016 for 7 years. People don't know about it. it's been without one single thank you from current players, or even former players. But it does hurt, Eric. It hurts. But I do believe in the work that we do and that I have done. So just this last year in 2022, I talked to the audience prior to you coming on about all the victories that we've made. I was able to have a AAA court unanimously side against the United States Soccer Federation and the Olympic Committee, charging them in violation of the Ted Stevens Act, which is a federal act, in violation of the Ted Stevens Act, unanimously found by not just U.S. Soccer, but the Olympic Committee, which is U.S. Soccer's governing body, that neither one of them were using 20% athlete representation in all decision-making processes. They weren't using 20% athlete representation. It's against federal law. It's against the Ted Stevens Act. I won this. I forced them, U.S. Soccer, I forced them to start using 20% athletes in all of the decision-makings, every single one of the decision-making, and the Olympic Committee. Crickets. Crickets from the media. This is historic. This is athletes' rights, Eric.
I remember
crickets
this.
From the media.
I know.
Crickets from Athletes Council. Crickets from current teammates who this affects. It's unbelievable to me, but it's actually been a really good year. And that's why I say it's lonely sometimes. It's thankless, but I know that I'm fighting for the right things. And that's why I say my fangs are still sharp. And I think, you know, I know things are slowly changing, but you have to fight for them. And you have to get knocked down a lot of the times. I've been knocked down, but I'm still fighting. And, you know, just recently, Eric, I also shared this with the audience at the beginning of the show, that I was able to get the class action awarded another $1.1 million just because I dissented, just because I objected to a number of things in the class action lawsuit. I objected, the court awarded, said that Kessler and company were taking 30% of attorney fees, which amounted to about $6.6 million. And the most you're ever supposed to get in a Ninth Circuit court is 25%, which would equate to about $5.5 million. So I was able to get back to the class action $1.1 million to be distributed amongst everybody. Crickets, nothing. No thanks, nothing. That's a lot of money into every individual's pockets. But it didn't come without everyone saying, oh, there goes Hope again. She's dissenting. She's objecting. She doesn't agree with this. She's being the black sheep. She's being disagreeable. But in the end, here we stand with more money in our pockets. So everything is a cover up.
I commend you for this because I respect the hell out of everything that you have done and what you just said. And I think if I'm going to make an attempt to grow these fangs back, the realities of you know my plight if you will, I mean going backwards is I'm not in a position to fight what has already happened, and I think I've tried that and I didn't have the successes that you've enjoyed, which congratulations, it really is something that I probably,
you gave people a lot of hope during that election run, Eric. A lot of people together.
We did. We are also disappointed with the realities of what Kyle Martino represented. And, you know, he's like a game of Among Us. I mean, it was like, who's the bad guy in this story? There he is. But I think what needs to happen and what I want so desperately to happen before I'm no longer on this planet is to be proud of our country, to be proud of our federation. That is a really difficult place to get to. We all know what needs to happen. We need a clean house. Everybody knows that. It's not a mystery to anybody.
And everybody, however many years ago at the election, spoke about wanting real change. And then they voted oppositely because I think money speaks.
That's how people handle well, that's what we've learned. We've learned that people will go into a meeting with us and say, yeah, yeah, yeah. But then they'll go into the next meeting with the other people just to protect their ass and say, can you believe those assholes? Well, they're so off base. And then you get called a conspiracy theorist or you get called a bunch of names and they'll do whatever it takes to protect their hide. That's the world we live in. And the realities of what the Athletes Council represent, which is really difficult to have any respect for any of those individuals anymore. I would say Aguchi Nyewu for me right now is a person that I respect immensely. And it's the first time they've had someone like him in those meetings, asking questions and saying, why do we do that? Why would you say that? And he's unafraid.
Incredible.
He's a big man. I wouldn't mess with
him. That gives me hope that there's at least one, because I look at these names on the Athletes Council and I'm like, how first off did anyone vote for somebody like Nicole Barnhart? I'm sorry. Yes, she was a second or third string goalkeeper and played behind me. I'm not trying to tear down, you know, a backup goalkeeper or anything, but she never had an opinion in her life.
Yeah, well,
ever in her life, she was quiet and she was a yes person. Yes. And that is it. So we have a bunch of yes people. They have been groomed to be in that position, to say nothing, to do nothing. And they're getting the people they want. So how are we, as the athletes, voting them in?
If you answer that question, you're a better person than I. But I remember these conversations. I remember a really unique conversation with Heather O'Reilly, who was very angry with me, and I couldn't figure out why. And I realized that they've just told her a bunch of lies about me to make her believe that I was a bad person, you know. And it's, you know, sabotage is a funny thing, man. And when you're really on the backside of it, and you have people who are going to great lengths to you know, tarnish your name or to say things that aren't true, it's. Just because you're trying to invoke change, or you want to buck the system, if you will, you just want the system to be better. I mean, I just want these people to be better at what they do. I mean, we're not asses, we're assets. They haven't been able to figure out the difference, and that's on them. That's not something that we should second guess ourselves for, that we just happen to have that wonderful word, integrity, which is something that I would like to think that my family and my kids, you know, growing up in this home, understand what that means. And that means don't throw somebody under the bus just because you might have a very temporary gain. Always do what's right. Do the right thing. It's not really a hard concept. But when you have people that are going to do the right thing for them and their careers, sometimes you see people making bad decisions. And these are fearful people. Shannon Box. I mean, how was she going to make money unless she cooperated? Let's face it, that's how that went down. There's about five or six other people that fall into that category. I'm sure Shannon doesn't appreciate me mentioning her name right now, but we don't appreciate you making a bad decision 4 years ago. So live with it. That's your problem, not ours, that you were unable or incapable of seeing the light.
It's really a tough tightrope to walk. And some of these players I love, you know, I love Shannon Box. I think she's a great leader. She was one of the best players I played with. And she's a good human being. And that's what scares me is you got these good people, but you're right. We're protecting our assets. Many of
desperation,
us.
You know? Desperation. And that's the word that needs to be used. Desperation.
Financial gain.
Will make you employment. You get to the end of your career and you're asking the question, oh God, what do I do now? What if I didn't get a call of education? What's my next move? This is all I know. What do I do? Unfortunately, to a lot of people, the next move is to figure out the right or the appropriate ass to kiss. You and I just don't kiss ass, so we're never going to be in that boat.
Welcome to SiriusXM Radio. what was I going to say here? All right, so we've come to the conclusion that all these ancestral relationships that we just spoke of, what we saw during the election, what we see with the Athletes Council, the fact that there's been very little movement forward and change within U.S. soccer. It's been there since the onset, you know, 100 plus years of U.S. soccer. Most coaches come from the same coaching trees, you know, the American soccer coaching style. Executives tend to stick around for most of their careers. Cindy Cohn, you know, she's.
Where do you stand with her? I'm just curious.
I liked her as a teammate. President? I liked her as a player. She got these toe pokes and worked really hard in the 6-yard box to get these goals. She was a hard worker. She was a competitor. But you know what's funny? People say that I ran for president for publicity, right? I ran because I wanted to get the word out that we're getting treated like shit, the women's team, and we're not getting equal pay, which is federal law, back in 1963. And the U.S. soccer is not even following federal law. I just wanted to get my voice out and be heard. And I knew that was a way. And the fact that I had, I was able to get nominated and get the nominations, which was very difficult to do. But I was able to have very good conversations with a number of different state associates, a number of different people, to at least wake them up to this topic. At the end of the day, I knew I wasn't going to win, but it wasn't some, hey, I'm here to just get my name in the news. It had nothing to do with that. And I know they say the same thing about you, but it is because we cared. And Eric, we actually thought you had potential to winning. And I guess the change candidates were all prepared to move all of our votes. And by the way, I'm proud. I did not end up last. There were 8 of us running. I was 5th, damn it. I was 5th. That is huge because I had very loyal voters. They stuck around for 3-4 votes. And I had like the same amount of voters. It was like, 1.8% of the vote, whatever.
You remember when I gave up? I threw in the towel when Kyle said he wasn't on board.
Oh, and I was mad at you. I was trying to be peacemaker, being like, hey, this isn't about us. This is about making change.
I threw in the towel and you know, when the deal was, just so the public could understand this, and if Kyle refutes this, then he is a bold-faced liar, which shouldn't surprise anybody. The deal was is that when we sat together and I said, all right, look, we need to invoke change. We need to, whatever number spits out of that machine, whoever is higher than the other one, what we need to do is we need to consolidate in that moment and take advantage of that moment and be a consolidated front and to say, if it's you, I will walk up on that stage and say, this is your election and you have chosen Kyle to be your candidate. I hereby would encourage all of my followers who have voted for me to please cast their next vote in the next round for Mr. Martino. That was my plan. You knew that. Everybody knew that. In the moment where it came out and I was, 4 or 5 percentage points ahead of him, we all looked at him and said, are we going to do this? And his comment, quotations, was, attrition is my friend.
He was not ready.
At that moment, we knew.
He was hopeful that he was going to get more voters in the next round of voting. It was selfish. It wasn't the plan. We all were in this almost as a team.
Well, we thought we were. We thought we were. And that was the disappointment that I...
But it was about the bigger goal. It should have been about the bigger goal.
It should have always been about that. But I have said this.
I was pissed at you.
I know.
Throwing in the towel. I was so mad at you.
You were disappointed more than anything. Let's call it
this. I was disappointed. I was heartbroken. I was mad at you. I was like, what? I'm putting myself through this shit for what?
Well, you know what's funny is, and to Kathy's credit, when the first number came out, she made a funny joke. Which you can think whatever you want about Kathy Carter and what she represented and what kind of candidate she was. But she said something really funny when that first number came out. She said, I'll race you to the door. I think she knew in that moment that politics were going to prevail. And you know, Carlos, you know, as much as we could, when take leadership roles and bad things happen on their watch, boy, they have a hard time taking responsibility for that. If he's not really a bad guy.
I love Carlos. I think he's a really good human again. Maybe this is where I'm naive. I don't know how he does his business dealings.
As acting president, when he called after and said, boy, that was something. And I said, well, congratulations, Mr. President. I said, I know that this might come as a surprise to you, but how can I help? If there's anything I can do to help, if there's anything that you believe to be true or helpful in my platform, I will be in full support of you and your candidacy and your presidency. That's the way this works. I'm not here to continue to scream at the rain, if you will. I want to help. And if I can help you, Now that this is over, this process, the first process was the hardest part. But what you and I didn't realize is that Cindy Cohn, Carlo, was actually put there as the Trojan horse to take Carlos out. And people don't realize that. People don't realize that that's actually what happened.
You know, this 1999 team has really taken over the entire Federation. You won't see me anytime soon, anywhere close.
Well, I mean, but it's you know, I make jokes about that all the time. I mean, you know, I think I said something silly the other day, like you know, I'm the greatest American coach that this country will never know, which is probably true. But, it, you know, that it's in a joking way, as much as I want to be involved in the process, that's just not the kind of process I want to be involved with. But, you know, in Carlos's scenario, I got to give the man a lot of credit. Reached out to me and had a ton of questions. And I continually told him to watch his back. And he said, oh, I think we're past all that. I said, no, sir, watch your back. The way that this has all played out has got a lot of the wrong people nervous. And they're going to turn you into, and he, if go back in time, I mean, if you ask him straight to his face, and he would, maybe he remembers this, or maybe they always, you know, say, well, I don't recall or whatever. But my point was, is that he needed to watch his back, and that some of the things that were coming down the chute were they were looking for a fall guy, and he ended up being that guy. So, I mean, look, I mean, it was very, very well done.
Can you answer me this though? I don't know if anyone's ever said this, but how the hell is Cindy Cohn the president of U.S. soccer? I don't understand it. And going back to the election, people thought that you and I were running for whatever media and attention, and no former athlete could ever run the Federation, right? Well, lo and behold,
I said this,
former player running the Federation.
I know.
Running the Federation, and they hated us for running.
She was the one that Zoomed us. And well, she was holding her child, questioning our business acumen. That was her big thing. What makes you think that you have the business acumen to handle such a position? Mm-hmm. That was the question. And she was the one put in charge in order to go back
so
to the-
So can she handle it? Because I think it's fair to say that it's the board making all of her decisions.
Well, okay. Does it surprise you that putting somebody that in there that you can control-
Oh, of course. That's what I'm saying. She's the face. She's being controlled day in and day out by the board. She's there. You know, it looks good for U.S. soccer to have a woman as president. It looks good to have a former player. I mean, this is typical U.S. soccer. You know, they are smarter than everybody. They have a good PR firm. They have great attorneys. They have the media in their pockets. They know what they're doing. And that's why it is really hard to get the truth out. With U.S. soccer, I think recently you said the common occurrence in our country is that media is asked by the Federation not to comment on certain situations. And it's the truth. They have the media in their pockets. They have
Nobody
the
likes
PR
to talk about
they have
that.
The money. They
you
have
what?
Deep pockets.
I have been, and that's not a money thing. That's an access thing. So, you know, you have people that work for big publications, and they say, well, if you write that, you will not be getting a press pass to the next
event,
or we will just stop answering the phone, or we will no longer have access to the people that you need information from in order to write the articles and have a job.
Of course. So
they basically are, you know, twisting or strong arming people to coercion so that they can keep their jobs. I mean,
when I got fired, Grant Wall knew hours before I even knew. And they wanted the story out. U.S. Soccer wanted the story out before I had a chance to tell anybody what really happened, because they said I was suspended. The reality was I was fired in that room with Dan Flynn. I was fired, and Jill Ellis. And they gave it to Grant Wall and said, oh, we're suspending Solo for 3 months. That's it. No big deal. You know, she'll be back in no time. I got my severance pay. I got my health insurance removed. Just like that in that boardroom, and nobody would know it. The media already heard Grant Wall's story and already heard U.S. Soccer's story. So it is a power play that U.S. Soccer is using, you know, to get these media behind them and tell the story that they want told. That's why everybody has celebrated the class action suit. It shouldn't be celebrated as this historic, great settlement. It's not. In fact, the team and Jeff Kessler, they lost on summary judgment. They didn't even have a hearing. This is a historic equal pay class action lawsuit, and there's no hearing for it. That's how bad Jeff Kessler fucked up.
God, I love you. I really do. I miss you. You know what? My fangs are back. You've
okay,
talked.
Okay, good. I was hoping I could get them back. No, but
and all that being said, you know, you walk into those walls and through those halls and we make jokes about Kool-Aid or whatever. There is a narrative that is understood. And you know, poor Cindy, I'm going to say it in this sense. I mean, every time she does anything, she has to look over her shoulder, her right shoulder, make two calls from, it's a lawyer and a lawyer and another lawyer. And then ultimately the decision is don't do anything. And that's the position she's in. JT Batson is now the CEO, which was a really interesting, twist in this story. I think this is a really unique guy. He's incredibly intelligent. I have had the chance to speak to him, to congratulate him on taking the position, and also just to ask some questions of where he sees this thing going. Seems like a really good guy. And this is a guy that's very similar to us as players, you know, taking a big financial hit just to be a part of a process that hopefully comes good at one point. Of course, there's a big payday at the end of this in 2026. I think that's the other thing that people don't understand. People like Carlos Bocanegra stand to make a lot of money, by the World Cup coming to the United States and Canada and Mexico. These people are a part of the distribution of money that if they all, you know, stay close to each other, they'll all financially gain from that. And that's factual. People don't understand that. The media isn't going to enlighten people. They're not going to say, well, that's the decision that so-and-so made. Do you know that he's going to get paid to say that, right? No, they don't know that. So it's the politics of it all, the ramifications of change, if you will, really scare people. They're afraid that this whole house of cards will fall over and we'll be left with nothing if someone like you or I are in a decision-making role, which I was going to get to this earlier, but I mean, I said it in an interview and I mean this, I had no intention of being president very long. I didn't want to be there to walk around in a suit or see what kind of sushi they had at the next game, shake hands with people and do the whole, hey, isn't this great? I was at no intention of that. I wanted to roll up my sleeves, get behind the scenes, look at some of the policies, look at some of the realities of what we were doing, not decipher what the big decisions should be because I'm going to play accountant now, or I'm going to try and manipulate the money the way Sunil did. I would hire people or bring people into the equation who would allow us to make very qualified decisions. I mean, I say this all the time as a coach, when you build your staff, you're the best listener and you have leadership qualities, but you surround yourself with experts in their field to give you It's our president, the United States. You can have your feelings about how he's running the country or if he's running it at all. He certainly is surrounded by people smarter than him who will help him make decisions the best interest of the country. Did they do that all the time? No. And we could argue politics until we're blue in the face. However, if you're president of U.S. soccer, we just needed some policy changes. We needed to stand up and fight for our women to make sure that they were being treated appropriately. We all knew that. We need to change the way that we find players. We need to change the platforms, and we need to make this less expensive for people who are excluded from this elitist game. We've even called it elite now. I don't even know why they would go there. They're going to call it.
I guess you own it, right?
It's like, that's the wrong word.
I always thought that was self-explanatory. I thought that was the obvious. You know, you win, you bring in people. It's not like you're going to make every single financial decision.
I thought so too, but I think people are afraid of people who are who have integrity and have the information or intelligence. I mean, just I went to San Diego State. My dad went to Princeton. You know, I tell people that all the time. My dad was a Rhodes Scholar. I was not a student, but I certainly have a Princeton education through my father. That's why I'm able to speak. And that's why I can exude rational behavior. Have I had some irrational moments in my life? You bet, as everybody. But when it comes to the sport and it comes to making logical decisions that are the best interest of the game, of this country, of their federation. I think we were actually very good candidates. And it's unfortunate that we are on the spot now that we are.
You know, I'm going to take it one step further. One thing that we left off with these relationships and the way U.S. soccer is ran, whether it's the relationships with the media or, you know, making decisions based off of power and financial gain and politics. When you talk about the political structure within U.S. soccer, you can't forget who their oversight committee is, which we talked about earlier. We're a national governing body. The oversight committee is the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee, the USOPC. They are intertwined. They are in bed together. You look at all the failings that the USOPC has had, whether it's with gymnastics and a number of different other sports. They have not been doing their duty as an oversight committee, and they certainly were not doing that with their relationship with U.S. soccer. It is a very tight relationship because U.S. soccer brings a lot of money to the USOPC. One step further is U.S. soccer's relationship with United States senators. All of these relationships coexist. So, you know, you can't forget that political aspect of it for the listeners out there. It's not just us complaining. It's not the fact that we can't get things done. There's a structure put in place and relationships put in place and people put in place to where it's almost impossible to get something done. And if you do get something done, it takes a lot of fight, a lot of money, and a lot of tears probably. And it takes years to get something done. Years. It doesn't happen overnight. And I will say, Eric, that we have made change. You know, there have been new policies put in place. Soccer United marketing no longer exists.
That you and I fought for tooth and nail, but keep going.
Yeah. They know that there's been different policies put in place, slowly but surely. And then obviously with the equal CBA moving forward between the men and the women, you know, I think there's some in terms of bonuses and things like that, you know, there's some things to question about. But overall, there's going to be equal CBAs moving forward. I never thought that would happen. But it's taken way too long. And this is why it's taken too long. And I don't think people understand that you're fighting from every different angle. There's so many different avenues to fight before U.S. soccer makes one tiny little change.
Well, I mean, and also, I mean, not to criticize our most recent appointment of Anthony Hudson as the national team coach, who's probably one of the least qualified people to do that job. That is by design. That is put out there. Let's put that guy in that position. We know we're going to fire him or get rid of him. Eventually, Sarakin was in that spot. Even back to my days, was a guy named John Kowalski, who they knew they could easily dismiss and never really had a realistic chance of. But it's all by design to keep us focused on the wrong things. So now we're all going to say, oh, this is incredible. Mm-hmm. It's incredible that this is the decision that they've made. Well, they're behind the scenes trying to figure out what the big picture is going to look like. We just won't like that big picture when it finally is presented to us. And they need time in their process to figure out a way to present it. That's all this is.
Yep. Well, I'm going to
put together the PowerPoint presentation yet to tell us what this looks like. It's coming, though.
I'm going to seem like a hypocrite by saying that I wish Carlos Cordero was running U.S. soccer because of his, you know, mistakes that he made along the way. But you can learn from mistakes, I believe. But he wanted to bring us back into the fold. He doesn't want to.
This is what makes you different.
Why is Hope Solo not?
You're not a hypocrite.
Why am I not a face of U.S. soccer? Why are you not? Why don't we just keep it in the family and have everybody help work towards a 2026 World Cup? This is what his vision was. And I think it's incredible because right now we're alienating so many people. I know you have to go. We got completely off topic. I did not even finish.
That means we have to do it again.
The Reynas and the Berhalters. So can I keep you for 5 more minutes? So I can come full circle. Let's get back on topic. I know we talk a lot of politics. It's been 5 years, so we had a lot to talk about. Most of us come to the conclusion, I'm going to go back to the Reynas and the Berhalters. Most of us come to the same conclusion that it can never be fixed. Berhalter will not be able to move on as head national team coach. You indicated the same. Well, how should Gio handle this? Because what I feel, you early on, you said it seemed like an entitled move by Danielle to make. Like, she can make a call to U.S. soccer, make her complaints. I feel like it looks like it's a mama's boy who really never got out from underneath his mama's skirt. And I know that's hard. I'm probably the only one saying that about Gio. He's been put in a horrible position, but he's a young man now. How can he step out from his mama's skirt and own this and Has he made any comments?
When you frame it like that, it's probably the best thing that ever happened, because it will never happen again. And he actually, as a young man, gets to say, "Mom, Dad, stay out of my life when it comes to this stuff. Don't ever embarrass me like that again."
Well,
and
perhaps we should say that publicly, because right now, he seems like a sniveling little boy.
But that's going
to
be
used to his parents fighting his battles.
But but we don't know if that was ever something that he had knowledge of, or it was you know, he didn't type that. He didn't pick up the phone. His mom did. And, you know, I have a soft spot, if you will, for Claudio and for Gio. Gio lost a brother in Jack to a brain tumor, cancer. And that had an incredible effect on that family. And it became a thing, I would say, that family really put all of their eggs into one basket. And it was let's get behind Gio. Let's let Gio live this dream. And when that dream was shattered, the reaction was inappropriate. Now, we could beat them up for days on this and say that was really dumb. That was a passion move. That was an emotional reaction. That's a very human thing to do on a very large scale. But because of the way it has all played out, this will force Gio to pave his own way. This is
good
about Gio now.
So.
This isn't about what happened. And I believe that his talent and his ability will come screaming through. He is too talented for this not to have a better ending. I mean, even when I'll tell you, I'll go off topic a little bit, I'd rather stay with you than go do what else I had to do. So when my daughter had a tryout, you know, I didn't want her to have to win all the name. I wanted to change her name so that it wouldn't be tainted. So that she could, and on one occasion she had a tryout where she thought she didn't make the team because I didn't tell her that I had changed her name.
Oh my God.
And when she made the team, she was very mad at me. I mean, she didn't make the team because she didn't hear her name called. She was very mad at me because she thought, you pissed somebody off, you made somebody mad, and now I'm the one that's suffering from it. And then I had to tell her, actually made the team. Did you happen to notice that so-and-so made the team? That was you. Because I didn't want people to know that she was associated with me. I wanted her accomplishments to be her own. And they all.
Jeremy feels the same way, by the way, with the Stevens last name and living back in Washington State. He wants our kids to be able to live their own life out from underneath our name,
yeah,
our individual name.
Tatum Winola will change her name to something else. Tatum Milan, the artist formerly known as, you know, I don't know. But I think that our, as a parent, I have six children. I have a lot of responsibility there. I have six very different people that I love immensely, that have different views of the way and different personalities in the way that they go about their business and the way they perceive the world.
How many girls do you have?
I have four girls. And I got the two young ones, you know, I got the 8-year-old just turned 8 and the 6-year-old. The 8-year-old was the one that had to have a tooth removed yesterday, which was something that.
Any goalkeepers yet?
Girl, man. I was like, wow. But, you know, I've told this story before about my daughter Tatum, who my oldest daughter tried to be a soccer player. She was pretty good, but she wasn't really a top level player. She knows that. She's up in Seattle now studying medicine. And my son, who is now 21 years old, had a bunch of health issues. So he really never became, he never really could be as athletic as he wanted to be. But when Tatum was born and she was about 5 years old, she had her first game. And I had this moment with my son, Tim, where we went to one of those old games and I held his hand and they showed the old videos of us playing. And it hit him hard. He said, "Dad, I don't want to be a soccer player." And I said, "Why is that, honey?" And he said, I'll never be as good as you. And I said, "No, that's not what you play for fun. You play for to be with your friends." But it was a big deal to him. So flash forward to Tatum in her first game, and she scored 5 goals in her
Papa,
first
I'm going to be better than you.
Right in my face. She grabbed my ears and she said, "Come here, Daddy. Oh, you're so cute. I'm so proud of you." And she goes, "I'm going to be so much better than you ever were." And she might be right. I mean, she is at a stage now, full ride scholarship to Pepperdine, one of the freshmen of the year in this past year. And it is so amazing watching her fulfill that part of her life. But this was a person and a personality that we saw at a very young age, that this is the way she is. I'm seeing that now with my 13-year-old and my 6-year-old, not so much with the 8-year-old, which is fine. Which is fine. People are allowed to have other interests. I will never be the overbearing parent who tells my kids that they have to do anything. I'm going to support what they want to do. And then maybe I'm different, but I've had success with that. And I think when we go back to the geo thing, mom was protecting the nest. Mom was a grizzly bear. You don't come near a grizzly bear cub. You just don't. You don't, because that will invoke irrational behavior out of that bear.
When I got benched in 2007, my family was in the stands cheering for Brianna Scurry. Okay. And they knew the pain I was going through. So I don't think, and they're, my mom's a mama bear. So is my grandma. Don't mess with my family, but we still deal with things on our own as adults.
We have one thing. I got set against Brazil, July 4th, World Cup, 1994 in Palo Alto. Biggest game possibly. That's one thing you and I have in common. Maybe you didn't know that. And I had a good tournament up to that point. My coach told me, you're not going to play today. And I went to Hugo Perez's room to say, I don't want you to think that I'm being a bad teammate. I'm rooting for you, buddy. I love you. You're my brother. I hope you have a good game. It didn't work out, but my family, the same thing. They sat in those stands and those tickets to not watch their son play and root for the United States, because that's what you do. Yeah. That's appropriate behavior. You know, having that sense of decorum is and class is something that not everybody has.
Well, Eric, I know our next topic, the next time I have the privilege to have you on Hope Solo Speaks as a guest, the next topic is going to be parenting, because I want all the advice that you can give me. Kids are about to be 3 in March. We got a boy and a girl, completely different personalities, but everything, I know that I've seen it for as long as I've known you now, since probably back in 1997, it's probably around the time I first met you.
Yeah.
I saw you bring your girls to our games. I've seen the proud father that you are. So it would be an honor to have you back on the show just to give me advice and to talk about kids and parenting.
You got it. I got some stuff. I'm a little unconventional, but I hope I can help.
I can't wait to hear it. Okay. Awesome. Have a good day, Eric. Thank you so much for being on.
You got it, Hope.
Hope Solo Speaks is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
SiriusXM Podcasts.